Hamilton. I'm totally out at the moment, so leave me a message. Luis. Hi, buongiorno. Sorry I missed you. This is Gianmaria Michelangelo Antonio di Labardi Nazzurra. I'm the PR executive for Ferrari. Listen, we were just discussing in the office in Maranello today. What are we going to call you? Because every great Ferrari driver has to have a nickname. Alan Prost, il professore, the professor. Nigel Mansell, il leone, the lion. He was British, so the lion. Niki Lauda, even he had a nickname. Il topo, the rat. But he made it work. So what are we going to call you? We've been banging a few ideas around, and I came up with the suggestion of Il Tizio, the dude. But maybe that doesn't work so well in English, Il Tizio. So, this is what I suggest we call you from now on. Lewis Hamilton, Ferrari driver, La Capra. La Capra is Italian for the goat. Forza Ferrari, Forza Lewis Hamilton, Il Capra.
Hello, welcome to Gareth Jones on Speed. I'm Gareth, he's Zog.
Hello.
And extra speed today, because in today's episode we are going to be talking about space stuff. And to leave Earth, it's what, 17,000 miles per hour, Zog, is that right? 25k?
Yeah, is it 17,800 maybe?
Yeah, I think you're right, yeah. So that qualifies under the Gareth Jones on Speed category.
Actually, sorry, just correct. Isn't that's orbital velocity, I think.
It is.
Not escape velocity.
Oh, yes.
That's different. Orbital velocity is the velocity you need to maintain a stable low Earth orbit.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is, 17,800 miles per hour.
Sounds right.
Escape velocity to get away from Earth's gravitational field, I think that's about 25,000 miles per hour.
I think it is. I think you're right. And was it Apollo 8? Was it Apollo 8? Was the fastest ever return from the moon, where they carried a lot of their velocity, their escape velocity, in orbit around the moon without ever really having to slow down too much. So their return to Earth was one of the hottest Apollo capsules recorded, because of the compression of the air in the upper atmosphere. Not friction.
Yes, good. I'm so happy you put that clarification there, because people always talk about how it's friction that is causing that heating when you get, crazy red hot, yellow hot
plasma
surface temperatures on your meteorite or your space capsule. No, it's not friction, it's compression.
Now you know. Hey, thank you for coming to our TED Talk. Listen, if you enjoyed the space thing, we're going to be talking space a little bit later in the show, but we absolutely, Zog, have to talk about a thing which kind of broke the internet, as they say, yesterday. We're recording this show on Tuesday, so Monday we saw the first official pictures of Lewis Hamilton at Maranello, and they didn't disappoint. Paint the picture for me, Zog.
I'm sure a lot of our listeners will have seen this particular image that will become an iconic image. It's already iconic, I think, of Lewis Hamilton standing by a Ferrari F40 in front of
Enzo's house.
Enzo Ferrari's old house. Yeah. And Hamilton, who we know he likes his clothes, has a great fashion sense and an adventurous fashion sense. He is looking like an absolute fucking boss in a beautiful suit and a beautiful overcoat and dark tie. Little hint of The Godfather in there, maybe, but certainly,
absolutely,
oozing classic Italian style. And I think it's just, I thought it was such a great image. It's so beautifully, I'm sure a lot of thought went into it. I'm not sure how much was, a lot of planning and meetings and discussions, or how much was instinct and how much was a stylist, the photographer, how much was Lewis himself, who has a great sense of personal style. But whereas we often know him for, you know, wearing something quite adventurous, pushing the boundaries a bit.
Bless him.
Taking a chance with this style. Here, this is a very, very classic, elegant Italian look. And it speaks to, I think, to a great sense of purpose and confidence and intention in Lewis beginning his spell at Ferrari.
Nicely put.
It's visually telling us something about how much he wants to embrace Ferrari's heritage and history. And it's just a fantastic photo. It's just a great image.
And it answers a question as well. Not only does it show us that he is embracing this, but it shows us how he's got... Sorry, I didn't mean to put the emphasis on how, like an ex-how presenter there, but I genuinely mean this. It shows us how he's going to achieve that. Because, let me... I don't know if I've ever said this out loud on the programme, but I've certainly said it out loud recently. It's occurred to me that when they do the Ferrari car launch every year, there's generally a picture of the car, the head of the Ferrari, the team boss, the two drivers, and the spare driver, and they're all wearing blazers.
Hmm.
Now, this happens every year. Everyone wears the blazers. They look great. But I just couldn't see Lewis doing that. And there was a mismatch in my head between Lewis's kind of clubby, modern style and the formality of the blazers they wear at the launch. So I was thinking, well, how is Lewis going to dress to meet those two? They're not going to let him turn up in a day-glow orange jumpsuit or something. They just won't. But similarly, I can't see him in the blazer. And so that perfect middle ground is this incredibly elegant suit and the coat. It's the way you wear the coat, over the shoulders, without your arms in the arms of the coat. So it's more of a cloak. That's what gives you that presence, that stateliness. Work of genius. He's like an artist, in my opinion. I mean it. Working in the area of clothes and imagery. And he's been given a new palette to work with. Italianate, in a way. And, of course, Italians adore style. They're passionate about style and design and fashion. They are world leaders in it. So this is a good match. It's better than the... The brand that sponsored Mercedes, who Lewis always had to wear, they're red and white and blue. Not Hugo Boss. What are they called?
Hilfiger.
Tommy Hilfiger, whatever it is. Yeah. It's cooler than that, right? He's suddenly found himself in, you know, fashion royalty. I love it, man. I'm so excited.
Yeah. And I just think, yeah, Lewis hasn't even turned a wheel at Ferrari yet, and already we're just, you know, going bonkers over it. This is, you know, whatever they're doing, it's working. But I am genuinely excited for Lewis this year at Ferrari. I know they're going to give us some terrific racing and drama during the year. And I'm hoping for some very strong results. But in any case, it's going to be a ride.
Oh, baby, the drama is just incredible. You said, Zog, we're already going nuts about this, right? This is how nuts I've gone. I've been working some Italian phrases that we're probably going to hear from now on. For instance, Elora del Martello.
Elora del Martello. The gold of Martello, the gold...
Elora. Elora. It's hammer time.
Ah.
It is the hour of the hammer. Elora del Martello is how it translates, right? It's hammer time. So it's Elora del Martello. And the other one, now I'm going to get this wrong, but I'm going to give it a go. It's something like, ragazzi, queste gomme sono andate. Avremmo dovuto fermarci ai box quattro giri fa. Which is, guys, these tyres are shot. Why didn't we pit four laps earlier? These are phrases we're going to hear in Italian. He's been speaking Italian. Did you see that clip that Ferrari shared?
Oh, I didn't know. Yeah, no, I was wondering about that. I mean, to get along well with the Italian sporting press in particular, I think you need to learn Italian. To really win the hearts of Italian racing fans, you need to learn a bit of it, at least a bit of Italian. So
Vettel was very good. He could speak pretty fluent Italian after a couple of years at Ferrari. And I think Alonso is pretty good in Italian as well. You know, that stood them in good stead there. All I've heard from Lewis so far is, how are you? I'm fine. And hi, fellas. And good afternoon or good evening. Very, you know, the standard in polite introductions and things, but good on him. I hope, well, I mean, I don't speak Italian. I don't, but God, I'd love to have a go if I was working there. Man.
I reckon the team radio is bound to be English, though. I'm sure I'll be very surprised if we hear Italian team radio, except for those, you know, end of the race, cooling down lap comments and little moments. Of course, we'll get that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's when you heard Vettel speaking Italian. Grazie ragazzi, he would say. Thank you, fellas. Which is a lovely cynghanedd, as we say in Welsh. Two words with a similar rhyming and rhythmic and sibilant pattern to them. Grazie ragazzi. It's a simple form of poetry, that two-word poetry. Oh, man.
Oh, and the other Lewis news, of course, not so much Ferrari-related, he went out on a date with Sofia Vergara. You saw this? It was...
I don't know who Sofia Vergara is.
Sofia Vergara is the wonderful actress who starred in Modern Family.
Oh, yeah.
So I think she was the highest paid actress, certainly on television, for a couple of years.
Ah, is she the South American woman in that?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
She's
very... She is fab. Now, I'm a huge fan. I love Modern Family, and so many of the best moments in Modern Family involve Sofia Vergara. She's just, I think she's great. But my heart had a little flutter when I saw that Lewis and Sofia Vergara were out on a date.
Wow.
Sadly, it seems it's going nowhere, but so I gather from it. Apparently, I'm reading too many gossip sites at the moment.
Well, hey, if it's going nowhere, Zog, that means that she's available to you and I, so there's an upside to that.
Dream on, baby, dream on. So this week is going to be seat fitting for Lewis and generally getting to know the team better and starting their test program with previous year's cars. They're not testing with this year's cars.
GPC.
That's coming up. But realistically, what do you expect to come of this partnership of Lewis Hamilton at Ferrari this year and beyond?
Confidence, I think. He will bring another level of confidence to a very strong team who are in good shape. Just look at how well Carlos Sainz did last year. And they were solid. They made very few errors in the way that they have done in recent years. You know, there are always some sort of clown parties in the Ferrari pit lane historically, but we haven't seen that for a little while. So there is a solid team with all the skills now. And Lewis will bring, I don't know. Who was it who said this? Was it Fred Vasseur who said that I love the way that Lewis is now engaging with non-Anglo-Saxon culture? Because all the other teams, with the possible exception of Racing Bulls, Minardi, of course, you know, are essentially English language, therefore Anglo-Saxon teams. But I think what Lewis might bring to Ferrari is a little bit of that Anglo-Saxon, don't panic, get on with it culture that Mercedes have worked very successfully with. Very pragmatic, right? We'll just systematically get through this. No blame culture, no panics. So he might bring a method to them, which will allow them to apply themselves at the very, very highest level.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because, I mean, I think you're probably right. I mean, I think he's, you know, one of the things we've learnt over the years with Lewis is that, you know, I mean, apart from his truly remarkable talent, is that he, you know, he does apply himself and apply himself over the long term, and he's very good at sort of, you know, at having a, you know, a longer term view of things, at sort of being able to say, you know, right now we're in a difficult spot, things are not going the way we want, but if we carry on working in the right way and being focused and being calm and doing the right work, we will improve and we will win. And that's an attitude that, I think, you know, Ferrari could have done with a bit more of over the years.
Yeah.
I think Vasseur has definitely
stabilized.
It seems like he's kind of bringing that kind of calmness and focus to the team. So, yeah, no, I think you're right. He will bolster that side of Ferrari. And I think it's going to be great for Leclerc. I really want to see how those two work together. I hope and think it's going to be a very good partnership.
You need to up your game to an incredible level when you are at Ferrari. You need to up your game when you're a teammate with Lewis Hamilton. You need to up your game if you're a teammate with Charles Leclerc. So it's like we're forcing each other to go faster and faster and faster and faster. The potential here is incredible. Also, the potential for disaster, consequently, is equally high. Either way, like you say, we get along for a ride. Hey, listen, just occurred to me, you talking about the way that Fred Vasseur has stabilised Ferrari there. Maybe a Frenchman is the perfect bridge between Italian, Southern European culture and Anglo-Saxon,
maybe.
North European culture.
Well, but that Frenchman certainly, you know. Yeah.
It's happened before, hasn't it? Remember, Jean Todt ran Ferrari. He was a Frenchman.
Yes.
With Braun alongside him, an Anglo-Saxon in Italy.
Now, that was the last high point for Ferrari, really. So, yeah, the signs are all good. The virtuous circle is there. Yeah, I'm looking forward to great things.
Me too. Can't wait. We'll be talking about it right here on Gareth Jones On Speed. If you've been listening to this podcast for a long time, and I know many of you have, you may remember that 10 years ago, we had a big party to celebrate 10 years of Gareth Jones On Speed. And we're going to do it again, because this year, as you know, 2025 is the 20th anniversary of the podcast. We're going to do something rather special. We want you to be involved. We'd like to know about your cars, and we'd like you to feature on the programme with your car. And most of all, we'd like to invite you to a big bash that's going to happen somewhere in the summer. We haven't got all the details yet, but if you would like to come along to this, drop me a line. Hit us up with an email, onspeed@garethjones.tv, with "tell me more about 20 years on speed" in the subject line, and we'll write back to you with more details as they emerge. 20 years of podcasting? That's ridiculous! Almost as ridiculous as Lewis at Ferrari. Gareth Jones, 20 years on speed! Here we are now in the third week of 2025, and we have a new American president. Sigh. And this American president, I believe at his inauguration, I didn't watch it. I have to say, I couldn't bear to watch it. But I did hear that he said, "We're going to plant the American flag on Mars." Did he say that?
I believe he did. I have similar feelings to yours. Didn't watch it, but yet he did express an intention that, yeah, he wanted somebody to plant an American flag on Mars. I wonder who gave him that idea.
Yeah. The thing is, this has always been the plan anyway. This is not Trump's bloody planning that's going to get us on Mars. NASA have been working towards planting an American flag on the moon for the last 30 years. They're just taking 40 years to do it. And it's already happening. So it annoys me that he's going to pick up and take the claim for it. It really does. But there is a space race on once again. We had the moon race, which was the Third World War fought in outer space. Rather than two superpowers firing missiles at each other, they had a game of dicks on the table and see who could launch their rockets the highest to prove who is the greater. And it diffused tensions and ultimately led to strategic arms limitations and the end of the Cold War, and then cooperation between the Soviet Union and America. And here we are again. There is a political incentive to get to the moon and to Mars, if you're America, that is, before China does. And the race is on, and the race is close, isn't it, Zoc? We're talking about putting people on Mars, aren't we?
Well,
before that. Well,
it's interesting, because my feeling is that there's a good chance that, you know, the next people on Mars will be sent there by China, not by America, I think.
Yeah.
Although getting to Mars, probably more likely to be Americans than Chinese, I think. Yeah, it's a complicated picture, and always hard to predict how these things work out. China tends to be very cagey about what it's doing in space and tends to be very reticent to release information about what it's doing compared to NASA. But America's space operations tend to be very affected by the political cycle, by the fact that there's a presidential election every 4 years and the funding for all of the big NASA projects is voted for by American legislators. So so NASA's long-term plans, apart from all of the problems that you're always going to have in doing crazy things like trying to send people to the moon and Mars, are further affected by the fact that every few years the funding background and the political backing for things changes, which makes it a lot harder to make your long-term plans happen. But to get sort of right up to date and where we are now, obviously with Trump's inauguration and with Elon Musk's closeness to Trump, it's clearly more likely that Musk-driven Mars plans will come to fruition. Quite how close we are to be able to do that is questionable. There are so many big problems you have to solve before you put people on Mars.
Yeah.
But America, specifically, you know, mostly in the form of SpaceX and in the form of NASA's previous work on it, has been working towards it. It has done a lot of work towards that goal, and is continuing that work. My feeling is that if anyone's going to do it, it's going to be the Americans. On the other hand, what China will definitely do before America is get samples back from Mars. You know, NASA has planned a sample return mission. You know, that is a mission that will get rock samples from the Martian surface and return them to Earth so that scientists here can analyze them in labs on Earth rather than with the more limited tools that you can send to Mars. This mission has been planned for years. Just towards the end of 2024, they announced that they needed to rethink the way they were going to do this mission. It was way over budget, running late, and they needed to come up with cheaper approaches and kind of, you know, put out a request for researchers, for interested parties to, you know, come up with better ideas. And we don't yet know what that better idea is. You know, on the other hand, China Space Agency has announced that it's moved its Mars sample return mission, which I think is Tianwen 3.
I think you're right.
They've moved that forward a couple of years, and that will probably happen, I think it's 2031.
Right. They've already got a rover on Mars, haven't they? China have matched the US in that ability. They've not flown a helicopter on Mars, but there is a Chinese rover already on Mars, Zhurong, I think it's called.
Yeah, although I think until China's put a couple of rovers on Mars and until they've been operating for as long and as effectively as, you know, as Curiosity and Opportunity, and I think you could say that NASA has demonstrated, you know, is clearly still the leader in robotic exploration of Mars.
Yep.
But the point is, China is catching up rapidly, and if it succeeds in its sample return mission in a few years' time, you know, that will be a significant marker that sort of says they're getting there. They're starting to match America's capability to do some of those missions.
Well, they've already, China that is, have already done stuff on the moon that no one else has.
Yes.
They've put rovers and landed on the far side, not the dark side, the far side of the moon.
That's right.
They are hell for leather going there to mine everything they possibly can. I think they're talking about a crewed landing on the moon 2028, best guesses. All they have to do is scale up the landers that they've already been putting on the moon. That's all they have to do. It makes it sound simple, doesn't it? But yeah, they basically have the systems in place and the technology that allows you to land on the moon and then send an ascent stage back. So they're very, very close to putting Tychonauts, as they're called, on the moon. They will need to leave Earth orbit, and that's not something that Shenzhou has done yet. The Chinese three-person Soyuz-type capsule, it's never left Earth orbit. But they are, in China, developing not only something that's more like the Dragon capsule, reusable, larger, long duration, a bit more like a Orion as well, or Starliner, but they are developing an almost exact copy of Starship, which, have I got this right? Is this called, what's their high lift? Their high lift five?
Long March.
Long March, thank you. Is this Long March 6 or 5, this one? It's got they skipped a number, didn't they? It's basically a Starship, a two-thirds scale Starship with a lower stage and an upper stage. So they are leapfrogging. They're catching up and overtaking in many ways, doing many of the things that America is doing, but on the QT. Plus, there is now a private space industry in China as well.
Yeah, I was just going to say that's another significant development in the Chinese space program, that yes, that there are private companies getting involved as well. And I thought it was actually one or more of the private companies that were copying Starship rather than that being part of the Long March program, I think.
You might be right. I may have confused that. But they have re-engineered Long March.
I think the big change in Long March is that it no longer uses hypergolic propellant. That is propellant.
Stuff that lights.
Stuff that lights when you mix the two fluids, so you don't. Yeah. Which makes it easier to relight your engines. But it makes the propellant management a bit more difficult because the things that you have to combine tend to be quite nasty. Like, I mean, nitric acid is usually one of the components, certainly in the old school hypergolic engines.
I'm just looking here. Long March 10 is very like Falcon Heavy,
yeah.
I would say. Central core, two throttleable boosters.
And reusability. They're starting to roll out more reusable designs,
yeah,
following the SpaceX and Blue Origin trend.
Staying with private spaceflight, both in China and elsewhere, there are some private missions uncrewed to the moon about to happening right now, preparing for launch. What are they called? Intuitive Machines are sending another lunar mapper, I believe, is that right? And a lander.
I'm not sure. To be ahead of me there. They had a failed mission, didn't they?
They did. Their first one.
Yeah.
Lunar Trailblazer, Intuitive Machines. That's January this month. It's going to launch as part of the CLPS initiative, the Commercial Lunar Payload Services initiative. It's going on a Falcon 9. There'll be a lander, and I think there are. So, yeah, there are other orbiters as well. There are several payloads on this mission. One which is called Lunar Trailblazer. Blue Ghost, which is Jeff Bezos's Blue Origin, of sending a mission to the moon. That's going to launch, bizarrely, on a Falcon 9, even though it's...
even though it's Bezos, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. It's kind of mercenary now, space, isn't it? You'll pay anyone to do anything. Have you seen The Expanse?
I gave up on The Expanse, actually.
Me too.
Which I sort of felt a bit guilty about, because I really liked the fact that it was kind of well thought out and really very well realised and beautifully production designed. Hard sci-fi.
Yeah.
But I didn't care about any of the characters.
Yeah, found them a bit annoying. I think I've watched the first season or half of the first season twice, and I had exactly the same reaction. I don't care. They were a bit sort of stereotyped, didn't care about the individuals. The universe and the world building was very good.
Yeah.
But everyone says, oh, you got to get to the bit where this happens, and then it's amazing from then on. So maybe I will persist, because, you know, we've got to visualise the future, haven't we? Science fiction, the job of science fiction is to visualise a possible future that we don't want to happen and avoid it at all costs.
Well, that's a job that you may choose to give yourself, yeah, if you're going to write, yeah, sci-fi. I'd say sci-fi is one of the great things about sci-fi as a genre is that it's so open. You can use it as a way to, you know, critique contemporary society, but do it in ways that, it just gives you a very interesting palette to work with.
Or you can use it to
warn of possible future dangers that you see, or to envisage possible glorious futures. Sci-fi can be whatever you want it to be. That's one of its great strengths as a genre.
Yeah, but the trouble is that the current tone for much of sci-fi is dystopian, and there are very few beautiful futures being imagined. Star Trek is the greatest and arguably the only true utopian, semi-utopian future, where the ability to harness energy and create matter out of energy and have unlimited energy means that you don't need money anymore. You can feed the world. You can spend your time bettering yourself. That's the philosophy of Star Trek, which I'd love.
Yeah,
I'm sure there are other sci-fi franchises do something like that, but not as beautiful as Star Trek does. Anyway, sorry.
My contrarian instinct is to immediately push back against that and insist that there are other similarly worthy utopian series, but there are certainly none that have had the cultural impact of Star Trek and that did it so well. No, it's absolutely the best example of that. I agree 100%.
Hey, we have a real star base now, making that link between Star Trek and the real world. That's what they call the headquarters where Elon Musk's SpaceX are launching their starships from in Texas. They call it Starbase. And the last launch was largely successful. Another incredible catch of Mission 7. But the Starship itself broke up on its way to orbit.
Yeah.
So getting there, but nowhere near there yet, are they, Z?
Well, you know, it's two steps forward, one step back. You know, they're getting there, but it's complicated. My takeaway from that test launch was that the booster catch seemed to be more successful.
Yeah.
But obviously they lost the Starship itself, which was something to do with a leak in an area between one of the propellant tanks and a heat shield and a buildup of pressure in there. There was also an issue with some of the engines that they lost, I think, two or three engines on the Starship, which probably made it
a
bit less, less stable, gave it less ability to steer itself.
Yeah, slightest wobble at those velocities and it break up. You know, you've got to be stable.
I think that success in managing another booster catch and how well that went, I think that was probably the main point of that test. So it looks like it's a qualified success.
They were trying a number of things on this second iteration of Starship that was on top of that booster, weren't they? They've changed some of the tiling. It's got new fins. It's got a different size tank, I believe, fuel or oxidizer tank. It was a very different vehicle. And they now know, okay, well, some of that stuff didn't work. And that's how they operate, isn't it?
Exactly. No, that's a very good point. It was I think it was more or less a prototype of their Block 2 version of the Starship.
Yeah.
They changed a lot of stuff. So if it had been a mature iteration of the previous Starship, the breakup and explosion would have been a bigger deal, I think. But given that it's a prototype, effectively, of a new version, maybe that's not so much of a concern.
Hey, they manage hot staging rather well now. That's two successive flights where hot staging is operated without any major issues at all. Very impressive.
And booster engine relighting, mostly successful.
Yeah.
One of the 13 engines failed when they were doing the boost back to the landing pad. But then when it was actually making its final drop onto the pad, all 13 relit.
Yeah.
Successfully.
Very impressive.
Relighting rocket engines is hard.
Yeah. Blue Origin, on the other hand, they kind of had the opposite problem, didn't they? They made orbit, but didn't recover their booster, did they?
That's right.
Yeah. So it's kind of, if you put one half of Starship and one half of Blue Origin's New Glenn together, you've got a very operational machine. I know they're different scales completely and it won't work, but I like the idea. But yeah, they're slowly chugging away, aren't they, New Glenn? Oh, wow, here's a shocker. I was reading up on this. Did you know that the world's first private Earth-orbiting space station is due to be launched in 2025.
Really?
I'm just going to check, but I did read that now. Yeah, that was kind of amazing, really. How come we haven't seen it then?
Is this anything to do with either Bigelow or space hotels?
It's not Bigelow Aerospace with their inflatable thing. Haven 1. A private space station will launch this year on a Falcon 9 to Earth orbit. That's what they say. Haven 1. Now, Haven 1, I think, are they Vast Aerospace? Is that their name, the people who run that? I'm going to have to do a search now and find out. But it's a sort of what I would call a Salyut-class space station. Small, 30-day duration, probably two or three people It was where the Soviets were in the 70s, and the Chinese are now beyond. The Chinese space station, Shenzhou, whatever. No, it's called Tianyang Heavenly Place. That sort of Mir class, it's slightly bigger than Mir. It's sort of Mir 2. It's almost ISS scale.
And as a commercial space station, is their intention to essentially, operate as a hotel for space tourists, for rich people who want to spend, you know, a couple of weeks in space?
If you want.
Are they going to be offering space to researchers, to space agencies? Because, you know, India, for example, has a space program.
Yeah.
The UAE, United Arab Emirates, has a space program. Israel has a space program. But none of those, India might, but smaller nations are not going to launch a space station and be able to have their own little spot in low Earth orbit where they can do some real science in microgravity.
Yep. I think that's what they're talking about with Haven 1. They've got a laboratory on board and they're selling space up there for people to come, like you say, and do research. Commercial ventures. It will be, massive companies like Rio Tinto who will have a research development wing who are looking at new kinds of aluminium, and that they will go upstairs. They will go up into Earth orbit and perform their experimentation there. It's a smart idea, I think. It reminds me a little bit of Space Lab. Now, Space Lab was not a free-flying space station, but it was an orbital laboratory that fitted in the payload bay of the space shuttle orbiter. And it was a European laboratory that would plug into the orbiter boot, and they would go up for 12-day missions or something like that, and were able to perform space science and research there. And Europe benefited from that. And now private firms are able to do that. If Haven goes up this year, I don't think it'll go up this year, but it's August, apparently. I haven't even seen the vehicle. But if it goes up, it will be supported by private missions on Dragons, probably. What are they called? The people who run regular private missions on Dragon, who did that? Polaris Dawn. Polaris Dawn will probably pop up there for good reasons. I mean, it is all kicking off in low Earth orbit at the moment.
More space debris, yay!
Yeah. I have seen the Starlink train in the past. I saw 14 go over a row, but I think I saw 3 go over in a row, very close together, the other night here in North Wales. We've had incredibly clear skies. Maybe that's why I'm thinking so much about space at the moment. And planetary alignments. If it clears again in the next 24 hours, we've got some major planetary alignments coming up. Oh my God! Sorry, I'm as excited about space as I am about Lewis in a Ferrari.
Yeah, planetary alignment, a visual treat, doesn't mean anything terrible. There's no astrological implications. Yeah, but it will be very pretty.
Do you know what? I've met a number of people over the last few years and I've really enjoyed their company. We're chatting away and then they say to me, "What star sign are you?" And my reaction is always, without fail, "Excuse me, I've got to go to the bar now and talk to someone else."
Quite right.
We'll leave it on that thought, Zog. We have so much more to discuss about space.
Another time.
It's exciting, isn't it? Yeah?
It certainly is. It always is.
Yeah. But as we have to say at the end of these special episodes of Gareth Jones on Speed, where we do talk about space, live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper.
If you enjoyed this show, then please like, share and subscribe.
Hold on. As this is a space-themed programme, let's do something that's never been done before. We'll do the end of show script bit in Klingon. This is a real translation. Hov Jaj Bibel Edge Bluktaha Vaj Ilpraha Ilnop Eg Ilsuk Lut Dag Jaboh Vitu Me Lutavad Kilau Ilur Cha Me Ilech Bom Mulmne ilad mahadvad mlok konul hol yilo ej gunvam nehe dombek ka hem he iltrap gos GarethJones.tv Gareth Jones on Speed Wales Dak Whizbang Kemlo Hlu Kepla